Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
In August of 1997, the body of 81-year-old Marjorie Nugent was found in a taped-up freezer in her home. Police quickly arrested her close and only friend, 39-year-old Bernie Tita.
Much to the dismay of law enforcement, the city of Carthage, Texas rallied around Bernie, and tales of his supposed kindness versus the miserliness of Marjorie captured the attention of director Richard Linklater.
This is based on a true crime. I'm Chelsea and I love true crime.
And I'm David and I love horror movies and in this case, dark comedies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always liked dark comedies. So yeah, welcome to this week's episode of Based on a True Crime.
Hey everybody.
Yeah. Long time no hear from us.
Hey, wait, we said that last episode.
Yeah. I hope you all are enjoying our new release schedule of Better Late Than Never.
Yeah.
It's been tough since the move. Work is pretty challenging and we had some sad life things happen recently. RIP to Pippin, the doggy that I grew up with. We got him when I was in high school, so he had a nice long life, but it still sucks.
Yeah, he was a really sweet dog.
Yeah, but I got to go home and be with my family for it, so yeah, I feel pretty lucky about that.
Yeah. If you are not a member of our Patreon, you should, because we are dedicated to getting at least one of those out a month.
Yes, it's true. We've been good about that, and our next one we're pretty excited about. We're covering the movie Urban Legends and talking about some of the urban legends referenced in the movie, and our Patreon supporters are going to be voting for which ones we talk about, so that should be a good one. I'm really excited because I haven't seen that movie.
Yeah. I actually have not either.
Yes, but this episode is for everybody, and we did want to start with shouting out the correct guesses. On Instagram, we had super duper Katie G. Facebook was Carrie, and Twitter was, of course, Chippy TFT.
Hey, good job, everybody. What was the picture again?
It was just a picture of Jack Black.
Of Jack Black, yeah.
It was a pretty obvious one. People guessed it real fast.
Yeah.
It's a really well-known movie, which is why I was so surprised. It's not on any streaming service or on iTunes, even. The only place you could rent it is YouTube.
Yep.
So I'm not sure why, but I was excited for you to watch it. I saw it in theaters way back when.
Yeah, I kept confusing it with the Bernie Madoff movie.
That's another one we could cover for the podcast, though.
Yeah, I like Jack Black's little mustache in it.
Yes, he's got a respectable little mustache.
We have a couple of new reviews. We have Karaoke. We have, well, I can't really pronounce this one. How did you say it?
I think it's Ayoji Asabi.
Ooh, sure. Nice. All right, cool. And then Jormiga.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for the reviews.
Yes. And actually one of these reviews, I can't remember which one, but talked about how they kind of wish we would go off script a little bit. So
yes.
It was a very nice, very helpful review. And we're going to try it because I don't have as much time to write a detailed script. So we're kind of going off of our notes. You'll have to forgive us if we don't sound quite as polished, but hopefully we also won't go so fast because apparently that's something we did when we were reading off the script. That's something I do all the time, really. I'm a fast talker.
Yeah. I kind of like doing a cold read on something really fast. It feels like a little, just like a challenge. It's like my own challenge. I'm like, I'm going to read it faster and faster and faster. Like the Micro Machines guy.
Yeah. We're gonna go off script. We're going to have some fun with this one. It's a pretty fun
40
movie.
40 minutes of banter?
Yeah. Yeah. Now the whole thing's going to be banter.
Or both of us laughing. Just you laughing.
Just me laughing. Yeah, they don't mind your laugh.
And me reading really fast. No, it's Oh, no, my vocal fry.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I don't know if we must have mentioned on the podcast.
No, I don't
that you
think
got,
we did.
Oh, yeah. Someone actually commented on David's vocal fry for once. So congratulations, yeah. David.
So I'm trying to stalk. I'm not stalking the reviewer that said I had vocal fry. I mean, not much, but yeah, a little less stuffy and a little more of a softer voice.
Can't help it. I got New Mexico allergies right now.
And I can't help it. Oh, I've got movie theater voice in a world. Oh, sorry. All right, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it. Bernard Bernie Tita II was born to Bernard Tita I and Lila Mae Jester on August 2nd of 1958. He grew up in Abilene, Texas. His father was a professor of music at Our Lady of the Lake College in San Antonio, and he also worked at the Southern Methodist University in Dallas. Like Bernie would eventually, he was kind of known for having a really beautiful singing voice. He was very involved in music and in the church. When Bernie was two, his mother died in an automobile accident. His father was actually driving at the time, and his mother was in the passenger seat. Bernie said that his father never forgave himself for this accident, and afterwards he started drinking very hard, which contributed to his early death.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah. Well, his father remarried in 1963 when Bernie was just 5 years old. His second wife was Clara Catherine, and 10 years later, when Bernie was 15, his father died. Bernie took an after-school job at a funeral home. At first, he was just doing yard work, but eventually he started helping out with the funerals.
Oh, that's a pretty young age to get involved in the mortuary sciences.
Yeah, I kind of feel like no matter how curious I might have been at that age, I don't know, I think it would have freaked me out too much.
I had a couple of classmates, I think, their families were like longtime mortuarians.
Yeah.
And, they were around that growing up, I guess.
Yeah, I feel like that can kind of desensitize you to it a little bit. But, you know, he didn't grow up with it, but he kind of felt like he had his calling. And he told his sister that he thought that he was meant to help others and that, you know, working in this funeral home was one way to do that. Bernie was very popular in school. He would actually sneak the hearse out of the funeral home on Fridays and drive his friends around town. Now that I would have been into as a teenager.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Bernie also claimed that after his father's death, he was molested by his uncle, Elmer Doucet. Doucet has denied this, although he did admit in court to, I guess, writing Bernie a sexually explicit letter, which, like, ew.
Oh, ooh.
I feel like that could be, you know, maybe not equally traumatizing, but pretty traumatizing to a teenager to receive that from, you know, an uncle, a family member.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Very messed up.
Uncle Elmer.
And Bernie said that he felt like this kind of introduced a darkness into his world that, you know, maybe contributed to what happened later. So he graduated from Cooper High School in Abilene in 1976, and he ended up going to school for mortuary science. So I guess he really enjoyed his time at the funeral home. He received an associate's degree in mortuary science from McNeese State University in Lake Charles, Louisiana. So he started working in these funeral homes, and in 1985, he moved to Carthage, Texas, and got a job at the Hawthorne Funeral Home. The owner at the time, Don Lipsey, described him as the most qualified young man he had ever seen. And this is a quote from Don. He said, quote, "He waited well on the families. He would sing solos behind the screen during the funeral. And he was a darned good embalmer. He had a talent of making the hair of the deceased look really natural."
Hey, that's important.
Yeah.
It's a very specific and kind of maybe elusive trait amongst people, so...
Yeah, and it's, I know we'll probably talk about the movie later, but it kind of opens with, you know, showing him kind of doing the makeup for a body. And yeah, it takes some skills. So Bernie was especially popular with the wealthy widows who populated much of the town. You know, they would often come in for the funerals of their husbands, and he would comfort them and quote scripture and sing for them. He had a really beautiful tenor voice, but it was also just popular around town in general. He was very generous. He would buy gifts for everyone. He sewed curtains for people. He helped out on their tax returns. He would basically drop anything to help a town resident in need. He was a member of the First United Methodist Church. He was a tenor soloist. He taught Sunday school, and sometimes he even gave the sermon, and residents would often say, you know, oh, he did a better job than the pastor. He was also very involved, you know, as his father was, with the music departments at his colleges. At Panola College, he was involved in the drama department. He was renowned for his knowledge of Broadway musicals. So he can hang with me, except he can't because he is a murderer. But I also like Broadway musicals, is what I'm saying.
Right on.
He was also asked to conduct the drama department's performances of Showboat and Guys and Dolls. In addition to being popular with the older widows, he was also actually pretty popular with younger women around town. And, you know, they kind of wanted to get a little bit closer to him. He was so kind. But Bernie showed no interest in them, which kind of started some rumors around town that he was gay, which he was. Later on, he would join a gay man's choir in his little break from being in prison, which we'll get to eventually. So in 1990, about 5 years after he moved to Carthage, he met 81-year-old Marjorie Nugent when he was performing the funeral services for her husband, Rod. Marjorie actually grew up just outside of Carthage. She was born in 1915, and she met her husband, Rod, at Louisiana Tech, where he was working towards his electrical engineering degree. Shortly after their marriage, Rod got a job working for Magnolia Oil, which later became Mobil. So, of course, he was pretty financially successful. They lived in Louisiana, New Mexico, and Texas for his work. They ended up raising their only son, Rod Jr., while they were living in Midland, Texas. Finally, in 1989, they moved back to Marjorie's hometown, and a year later, Rod suddenly passed away due to heart failure. So he had done very well over the course of his career. He was worth between $5 and $10 million.
Wow.
Yeah. And after his death, Marjorie became the wealthiest widow in Carthage. Prior to his death, they had built a sprawling 6,000 square foot stone home at the edge of town, which was surrounded by walls and had an electronic gate. Marjorie tended to have a, we'll say, less than stellar reputation. She was known for being a bit stuck up and stingy. She would, you know, despite her wealth, haggle for lower prices, even on vet bills.
Oh, we should try that.
And she had a strained relationship even with her family. You know, she had a sister that she hadn't talked to in years. She even didn't have a great relationship with her son. You know, although I think maybe a better description of her, you know, given by residents of the town, was that, you know, she wasn't straight up rude to people, but she didn't go out of her way to be friendly to them. And that really sticks out in a small town. And, you know, she basically had the exact opposite disposition of Bernie, who would seemingly do anything to help out anyone. So not many people attended Rod's funeral, and Bernie noticed that, you know, Marjorie didn't seem to have any friends. He sang during Rod's service. He lent his coat to Marjorie afterwards when he noticed that she was shivering. And once the funeral was over, he continued to check in with her to see how she was doing. He started coming by her estate for lunch. He took her to theater shows in town. And he even left little notes of endearment around her house, which is a little bit weird. So in return, Marjorie was very generous with Bernie. She bought him a $12,000 Rolex watch. Eventually, as they got closer, she gave him access to her bank account so that he could pay bills for her. And she also started paying for him to join her on these trips. She paid for him to go on a cruise with her. People around town started becoming a little bit suspicious of their relationship, although they were kind of wondering, you know, who was seducing who. Was it the, you know, younger gentleman going after an older woman for her money? Or, you know, was she kind of using her money to lure him into this friendship? Marjorie, you know, not only did she have a lot of money prior to her husband's death, she also was continuing to make between $200,000 and $300,000 per year in oil and gas royalty payments.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah. And Bernie was a bit of a shopaholic. As I mentioned, he really liked to spend money, not only on other people, but also on himself. Eventually, Marjorie offered him a salaried job to basically be her personal assistant. And he accepted. He left his full-time position at the funeral home. And by that point, Marjorie had already changed her will to make Bernie her sole beneficiary.
Uh-oh.
Yes. Marjorie told her cousin that she felt like her son didn't appreciate her. So this was kind of like a bit of an F you to him, you know, to make this other man who's been showering her with attention, you know, her inheritor. Marjorie gave Bernie money to buy a home about a mile from her estate, and he decorated it all to his style, which apparently included a lot of penguins. He liked penguins because he thought that they were snappy dressers.
Oh, they are pretty snappy dressers.
I kind of like penguins for the same reason. He also used her money to buy several small planes, and he got his pilot license, and they traveled all over the world together. They went to Europe and Egypt and Russia. They flew to New York City to see Broadway musicals, and basically Bernie was living the life he had always dreamed of, except that he did start finding Marjorie to be a bit overbearing. So when he was out, he constantly had to check in with her. She would freak out at him if he wasn't home at exactly 11:45 for lunch. But still, all in all, I don't think that's a very bad arrangement, considering, you know, the amount of money he apparently had access to and was able to spend all willy-nilly. And, you know, he didn't just spend the money on himself. He actually started kind of sneaking money out of her bank account to give out to people around town. He ended up buying at least 10 cars for people who couldn't afford them.
Wow, he must have been pretty sneaky.
Yeah, he bought a home for a struggling couple.
Even sneakier.
Yeah, he paid for scholarships to students at Panola College. He gave $100,000 to the First United Methodist Church. I guess they were like constructing a new wing on the church. This is kind of one of the crazier ones, I think. There was a woman in town who owned the like a trophy shop, and that's where the high school would get all of their trophies from. And her business was failing. She told Bernie about it, and he bought the business so that students at the high school could continue to get their trophies. Yeah.
Wow.
He paid for like choirs to come to town to give concerts, and he would, you know, give away free tickets to these concerts. And he also funded a coworker from the funeral home who wanted to start a clothing store, like a Western style clothing store.
He was so generous with Marjorie's money.
Yeah, so generous with someone else's money, especially considering with her disposition, you know, although she might have been happy to have Bernie buy whatever he wanted with her money because she felt like, you know, they had this friendship that she was benefiting from, it sounds like she wouldn't give a damn about the high school sports team not getting a trophy. So to spend her money on that kind of a venture, I think he knew that it was wrong, for sure.
Yeah.
So they continued for years to have this friendship. And then in 1995, things kind of started to take a turn for the worst. So Bernie told his sister that Marjorie seemed to be developing dementia and that she had fired all of her gardeners because the flowers didn't bloom on time. He told his sister that Marjorie was just really controlling and it was starting to wear him down. When his sister asked why he didn't just quit, he said that he couldn't because he was Marjorie's only friend. So then in Thanksgiving of 1996, Bernie went to his sister's alone, and he told her that Marjorie had gone to Ohio to visit her sister. Christmas time came around, and according to Bernie at least, Marjorie was still in Ohio. By the early spring, when townsfolk started asking about, you know, where Marjorie was, why they hadn't seen her in months, he said that Marjorie was sick in bed and she was not taking visitors. And by late spring, the story had become that Marjorie had a stroke and she was recovering in a nursing home.
That seems suspicious to me.
Yep. Well, some of Marjorie's business associates were getting suspicious, but no one really wanted to accuse Bernie of anything, you know, because he's just such a nice guy, and also because he was continuing to, you know, spend her money around town, you know, very, very generously.
Yep. I see what's going on here.
Yeah. So finally, in June of 1997, an unidentified Carthage woman called police to say that she was worried about Marjorie. It took about a month for police to actually start looking into her whereabouts. They talked to Bernie. And Bernie told them that she was at a hospital in Temple under an assumed name. But police followed up on it. They actually went to the hospital and they couldn't find anyone matching her description. Finally, they contacted Marjorie's son and he came up from Amarillo with his oldest daughter and they searched Marjorie's house. They found a freezer that was taped shut. They thought it was weird and they opened it up and inside they found Marjorie's body. She had been shot 4 times in the back.
Wow.
Yep.
A taped up freezer.
A taped up freezer. There's no reason to tape up your freezer unless there's a body inside. And technically there's no reason even when there is a body inside. It's not like they're going to bust out.
Yeah. Yeah. How odd.
Very odd.
Well, it's something to look for though.
Yep.
If you come home and your freezer's taped shut, don't open it.
Don't open it. No. Yeah. Especially if you didn't tape it up yourself, because then someone was in your house.
Yep.
If you come home and your freezer is randomly taped up, slowly back outside of the door.
There's going to be a body in it. Or yep. It's Zool.
Or it's a portal to another dimension.
Could be.
Yep. All right. Your turn, David.
Oh, my turn? Yeah, I get the post-death stuff.
Yep. I'm doing pre-death. David's doing post-death.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Well, police went looking for Bernie, and they found him in town. He was about to take a team of Little League baseball players and their parents out to dinner. Actually, that reminds me of The Outsider a little bit.
Oh, yes. The suspicious Little League coaches. Yeah. You're the nice guy. Except in this case, the nice guy did actually kill her. Spoiler alert. It was not like a creepy demon or whatever.
Yeah, it wasn't Zool. So they took him to the police department for questioning. Well, he quickly broke down and admitted to shooting Marjorie to death on November the 19th. Now, keep in mind that this is months later.
In the
later.
Summer, yes. Yeah. Months and months and months later.
So they asked him why he shot her, and Bernie told them that she'd become hateful and possessive. And in his confession to the police, he said, quote, "I had thoughts of hitting Marjorie in the head with a bat or anything for a couple of months prior to November 19th of 1996, but I did not want her to suffer. Marjorie had a rifle in the freezer closet. I had moved the rifle into the bathroom near the garage. She had walked out into the garage towards my car. I took the rifle and shot Marjorie in the back. She fell face first. Marjorie was still breathing heavily, so I shot her again. I may have shot her one more time. I did not want her to suffer. I then dragged Marjorie by the feet from the garage to the freezer. I had taken the food from the freezer. I placed her into the freezer and covered her with the food. I took a water hose and washed the blood from the garage. I swept up the bullets along with some leaves and threw them away."
So pretty premeditated there.
Yeah, it seems like there was just, he had a plan.
Moving the rifle was a big sign that it was premeditated.
Yeah, well, so, but later
he claims that it is not.
Yep, exactly.
That he had kind of a break. So at least with what he wrote in his first confession, that was my impression.
Well, later on, while he was talking to his sister from jail, he said that there wasn't anything in particular on that day that set him off. He said he just realized that he couldn't stand living with her for another day.
Hopefully you won't reach that point with me.
Oh, no, never. I love you so much. You're the best. So the district attorney, Danny Buck, was really shocked at how the town rallied around Bernie after his arrest. A group of women tried to raise money for his $1.5 million bond, so he had added theft charges to raise the bond to almost $3 million. Danny believed that Bernie was a con man who had duped the entire town. Marjorie's son, Rod Jr., agreed, and he also further alleged that Bernie had intentionally worked to alienate his mother from her friends and family in his plot to take her money, because as you remember, she was basically estranged from the rest of the family and isolated. So Danny was concerned about getting a fair trial in Carthage. He was really hoping that Bernie would take a plea deal, but Bernie ended up not doing that. Danny applied for a change of venue, and he got the trial moved 50 miles away, which I guess could help a lot, get it out of that small town.
Yeah, and I always think it's interesting, you know, when change of venues take place. I think they might have mentioned this in the movie. You know, it's usually because the town is so set against this person, you know, someone comes in and kills a member of the town, you know, and they're going to want revenge and justice. And in this case, it was the exact opposite. A change of venue because the town just loved Bernie so much.
Yeah. What a rare occasion. Well, Bernie's defense was that he had killed Marjorie in an act of passion, while Danny argued that Marjorie had found out about Bernie stealing from her and then she had confronted him about it. In the end, the trial only lasted for less than a week, and it took the jury only about 20 minutes to find him guilty. He was sentenced to life in prison.
Yeah, and I feel like that absolutely would not have been the case without that change of venue.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, you are not joking. So prior to the trial in January of 1998, there was an article published in the Texas Monthly that was called Midnight in the Garden of East Texas, and this was written by Skip Hollandsworth.
It was also my main reference for this research.
All right, cool. And we'll talk about him a little bit later when we talk about the film.
Oh, yeah.
Richard Linklater read the article and couldn't get the story out of his head. He even ended up attending the 1999 trial. So that's pretty hardcore.
Yeah. Well, he's Texas-based, right? He lived in Austin. Right. So it wasn't too far to travel. And yeah, he really followed the case.
Well, so he and Skip Hollandsworth began working together on the screenplay that ended up becoming the movie Bernie, and we'll be talking about that just here in a little bit. A few weeks before production on Bernie began, Richard Linklater and Jack Black visited Bernie in jail, and Richard and Bernie struck up a friendship. The movie premiered in Austin and got really positive reviews from critics, but negative reviews from Marjorie's family. In the audience was Jodie Cole, who was an appeals lawyer, and after she watched the movie, she felt that Bernie's sentence was a miscarriage of justice based on watching how Jack Black snaps before committing the murder. She thought it was a classic disassociative moment, and
it's nuts to me.
That's just so wild.
Like, this is not like a documentary or somehow footage of the act happening. It's a movie.
They should have used that on the poster, though. It was like, yeah. Jack Black's performance was so good, it convinced me that it was actually Bernie.
I don't know, man.
Well, she ended up taking on Bernie's case, and while meeting with him, Bernie confessed to her about the alleged sexual abuse that he had suffered at the hands of his uncle that we mentioned earlier. Jodie Cole successfully appealed his conviction, and she claimed that the abusive relationship between Bernie and Marjorie, that combined with his past, triggered the attack. And it was not premeditated, as the prosecutor claimed. In addition, there were allegations that his confession had been written under threat of release of private videos found in his home, supposedly videos of him with men from the town. And even Danny Beck said that he would not have sought such a harsh sentence had he known, and he ended up recusing himself from the retrial. Bernie was released on $10,000 bail and moved in with director Richard Linklater in his Austin home. So that kind of
blew my mind. And I feel like, I don't know, it kind of made me rethink my feelings of the movie, knowing how it kind of influenced the case in real life. I had, you know, all of this happened after the movie was released. So, you know, last time I looked into this case was after I saw the movie for the first time. And the fact that after this movie came out, it basically gave him a second trial. I don't know. It kind of made me feel a little sick.
Yeah. But also, yeah, you got to feel good for Jack Black that he played it so sympathetically.
Yeah, but movies aren't real.
No, they're not.
And then the liberties that they took with this movie, which we'll talk about, you know, in a little bit, are pretty significant. You know, they do not portray Marjorie in a very flattering light at all. You know, I think make her way worse than she was in real life.
Yeah.
And then based on the movie, he gets a retrial? I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, that just, I don't know. That's some next level stuff.
Yeah.
Well, even worse, kind of insult to injury, is that Marjorie's family found out about Bernie's release on the news.
Oh, it makes me so angry.
Yeah. It wasn't like the prosecutors notified them ahead of time or anything. It's just like watching the local news. Oh, by the way, Bernie's living with the Hollywood director.
Oh, man.
Well, Bernie's resentencing trial began on April 6th of 2016, so not that long ago. The trial took place in Henderson, Texas, again due to Bernie's continued support in Carthage all these years later. Marjorie's family had to get on the stand and argue that she was nothing like she was portrayed to be in the movie. So they had to say, She's not Shirley MacLaine. This wasn't her. She's a fictional character.
Yeah. Yep.
And in fact, the director, Richard Linklater, ended up testifying in Bernie's defense, saying that Bernie was a, quote, incredibly nice, generous man who did a horrible thing. Okay, that's fine. But he did the horrible thing, so.
Yep.
On April 22nd of 2016, the jury deliberated for around 4 hours before delivering a new sentence of 99 years to life. And his lawyers appealed again 1 week later. And in August of 2017, a Texas appeals court upheld the 99-year prison sentence. So Bernie will be eligible for parole in just a couple of years, 2029. And he will be, just 7 years old.
Yeah, so that's the story of Bernie. I guess in terms of discussion points, I don't know. Are you team Marjorie's family? Or are you team Richard Linklater? What kind of punishment does someone deserve for killing a person who's, like, you know, maybe not the nicest person? Does that make it okay? What do you think?
Like Richard Linklater.
Yeah.
The film influences my decision here, but the opposite way. Watching the Bernie film without knowing any of the true crime,
mm-hmm.
from like the first reel, I was like, he's after these old ladies' money and he will kill any of them. And I didn't get that he was just a super friendly guy. Like, I don't know what they were smoking, but like the movie to me, I was just like, he's going to kill her at any second. Of course he's like, what's the granny robber? What is there a thing? Is there a saying?
I don't know, but I'll take granny robber. Why not?
Yeah.
So I
was like, oh, okay. He did it and he would have done it if any of these other widows were wealthy and the timing was right.
Yeah. I can't help but feel after reading what I read about the case, and a lot of what you find online is very sympathetic towards Bernie, but I don't know, the impression I get is just that he's incredibly manipulative. And I think, you know, yes, he was well loved. He also bought people houses and cars and just whatever they wanted or asked for, you know, and he donated $100,000 to the church in a town where, you know, that kind of thing's very important. And I just think that it was never his money. So it wasn't like he was doing good things. The whole time he was just stealing from her before he killed her, before he shot an 81-year-old woman 4 times in the back. He was 39. He could not just wait for her to die. And I guess, you know, that's actually some of the arguments that are made in his defense, was like, you know, if it was just about the money, he was her sole heir, he could have just waited for her to die. Or like, why didn't he just hide the body somewhere? You know, why did he keep it in the freezer? And Jack Black plays it
like he's playing the long game. That's what I don't get. Like, that's so frustrating.
Yeah.
This makes me mad.
I think that maybe neither side is completely right and it's something in between. Maybe at least in the beginning, he did not intend to murder her or was just trying to wait it out to get her money. And, you know, maybe he did snap in a way, but I just feel like he was always after her money. And I don't believe he had a dissociative episode. I could believe that he kind of snapped in that he realized that he could not wait for her to die, but he also was strategically moving the gun around the house and fantasized about hitting her with a baseball bat. So yeah, I gotta say, I'm not team Bernie here.
No.
Nope. All right. Sorry.
Fair enough. All right. So some things we just talked about regarding the film, we will chat about in a little bit more detail here in a second. So sit tight. We'll be right back.
Can I tell you, I am not fond of cremations. I just don't like the idea of someone spending eternity in something the size of a motel ice bucket.
He was the nicest guy in town.
He was about the most popular man in Carthage.
Real people person. Just made you feel real good about yourself.
It's like he cast a spell over the entire area.
Room service.
And she was just a mean, old widow.
She used to tear up my toys. She pulled the heads off my dolls.
Well, there's some goodness in there, too.
Who says opposites don't attract?
She doesn't have anyone. She's a very lonely person. She needs someone.
You sure about that?
From the director of School of Rock and Dazed and Confused.
It was widely assumed that Bernie was accompanying her places.
Oh, yeah. Bernie took her everywhere.
They went to Russia, Acapulco, New York City. They went to Europe. Always first class.
He bought jet skis, 9 cars.
This spring,
somewhere along the way, it was just Bernie. He was her servant.
She was demanding.
You should have been here hours ago.
Condescending.
All I want is for you to be a man for once in your life.
Even conniving.
I know you hate me!
No.
I got everybody else!
I don't know how the guy stood it.
A woman like that with a bad heart? He should have just shoved the pillow right over her face.
There are people in town, honey, that would have shot her for $5.
Everybody's describing Bernie to you as an angel.
The nicest fella I've ever met.
He didn't do it.
He's an angel, all right. An angel of death.
That dog don't hunt.
Jack Black, Shirley MacLaine, Matthew McConaughey.
Wheel of misfortune. Your number comes up. Danny Buck's coming to get you first.
Bernie.
In the freezer?
Yeah.
All in one piece or chopped up?
One piece.
Frozen like a popsicle.
Bernie Tita is a well-loved assistant funeral director in the small town of Carthage, Texas. He is a fantastic singer, a choir member, and a churchgoer. So in the eyes of the townspeople, it seems like Bernie can do no wrong. After he befriends Marjorie Nugent, a wealthy widow who is disliked throughout town, it seems like Bernie has it made. But when Marjorie is found murdered and hidden in a freezer, he is the only suspect, who confesses anyway, and nobody blames Bernie for the crime, except for the prosecution. So this is Bernie. It's an adaptation of the true crime that we just talked about, and it kind of plays out very similarly to how we discussed.
Yeah, it's I think we'll get into our opinions later, but I will say it's a well-done movie, and it's kind of like documentary style, so they'll intercut, you know, what's going on with people from the town kind of talking about Bernie after the fact, and I did like that style.
Yeah, I like the style too, and a lot of those people are actual townspeople from Carthage that knew Bernie, and they knew Marjorie. So,
oh, wow.
Which is an interesting kind of blending of fiction and reality, which also happened in the case of the retrial.
Yep.
We've actually talked about the people involved with writing the movie Bernie, which is a screenplay by Richard Linklater and Skip Hollandsworth. And we'll get to Linklater here in a second. But first, I wanted to mention Hollandsworth's true crime history book, which may be of interest to everyone, called The Midnight Assassin. And it was named a New York Times bestseller in May of 2016. So from Wikipedia, I have not read this book. It is described as such. The Midnight Assassin is a history of Austin, Texas in the year 1885, when a brutal but brilliant serial killer went on a rampage, ritualistically slaughtering 7 women over the course of 12 months and setting off a citywide panic. Here's where it gets interesting. 3 years later, when a man nicknamed Jack the Ripper carried out a similar series of killings in the Whitechapel district of London, England, Scotland Yard detectives speculated that he was the Austin killer who had traveled overseas to continue to carry out his diabolical work.
How come I know nothing about this case?
I don't know.
I've never heard of this at all.
Yeah. So
wow.
It's a.
I want that book.
Yeah. I mean, May 2016. So it's just within the last couple of years. Maybe we'll be following up with some more information on this book soon. You're going to buy it for your Kindle right now.
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now.
He is, well, I guess I kind of dropped his big bomb first. Now I'm just thinking about Jack the Ripper, actually. But if you want to talk about Jack the Ripper, check out our From Hell
version. Okay, I have heard of this. The servant girl Annihilator, yes.
Okay.
I only know them by their snappy nicknames.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Yep. Cool. I mean, not cool. That sounds very creepy, but very interesting. Not really as interesting as that novel. He is, however, an executive editor for Texas Monthly Magazine, and that role is, I guess, what got him involved in the Bernie's case and how he connected with Richard Linklater.
Yeah, the Midnight in the Garden of East Texas was published in Texas Monthly. Yep.
So this film was directed by Richard Linklater, who is known for quite a few sort of indie auteur films. Really character-based director. I think one of his first films was Slacker in 1990. One of the ones, though, that I know is pretty popular is the coming-of-age comedy Dazed and Confused in 1993.
I've not seen either of those.
Ah, well, I think a lot of people like that movie.
Yes.
That's actually where one of the co-stars of this film, his catchphrase, Matthew McConaughey, and his, what is it? All right, all right, all right. Yep, that's where that comes
all
from.
Right. All right. All right. All right.
He did the epic Before film trilogy, which consists of Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, and Before Midnight. And that's starring Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy.
I've not seen any of those.
I think I've seen Before Sunrise. I've not seen the other two.
I'm not interested in romantic dramas, just romantic comedies.
I think they're really dramatic. So he helmed the really fun musical comedy School of Rock with Jack Black.
I love that movie.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah. And now there's a musical. He did two experimental animated films, Waking Life in 2001 and the Philip K. Dick adaptation of A Scanner Darkly in 2006. That's like got a crazy cast, but it's like
Keanu Reeves, right?
Yeah, Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder. They team up again. So yep,
speaking got that Dracula of which, connection. It's time to watch Destination Wedding.
Oh, coming soon?
Yeah, that's my coming soon.
And he did that super ambitious movie Boyhood that came out just a couple years ago that they filmed like over 11 years. It was like the kid is like a kid and then he's a teenager.
Yeah, won a bunch of Oscars. I know. My parents did not like it.
All right. It doesn't seem up my alley. I feel like the ambition behind it is pretty impressive though. I also feel like it's Oscar bait, but like playing the long game.
Yeah, like, I feel like when you put that much effort into something, you deserve to be recognized. It's groundbreaking. It's something totally different, but I also have zero desire to see that movie.
Yeah, same. So we won't be covering it. I don't think there's any crimes that happened or any horror things. So
crime is that they stole like $20 from my parents when they bought their tickets. They hated it.
Well, Bernie was released on September the 16th of 2012, and it ended up grossing $9.2 million on an estimated $5 million budget.
It's a very low budget movie.
It was very low budget, released on a low number of screens, so I feel like that seems like a good number to me. I don't know. I'd take $9.2 million.
Yeah, almost doubled it.
Yeah, we kind of already gave away the cast, but I mean, hopefully you know by now that Bernie is played by Jack Black. I dig Blackjack.
Yeah.
I've never even played Blackjack. I don't know any card games. Wait, is it Blackjack's a card game, right? That's not the spinning wheel game.
Oh.
What's the spinning wheel game? Roulette?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's not the spinning wheel game. Yeah. It's a card game. Yep. Blackjack. But Jack Black, we already mentioned School of Rock. We just saw the sequel to Jumanji, which was really good. He was awesome in that.
I was surprised how much I liked that movie. I'm kind of a purist. I love the original Jumanji and the fact that they were making it with video games, which I do not do video games. I was like, this is so lame. But actually, the movie was really funny and cute. I liked it a lot.
Yeah. He plays R.L. Stine in Goosebumps.
Yes, I really liked the Goosebumps movie, and I'm excited for this new one.
Yeah, and I guess he's not in the new one, but he's playing a different character in another spooky kids Halloween movie, The House with the Clock in Its Walls.
Oh, yeah. So that looks pretty good, too.
It does. It looks fun. He's in High Fidelity.
I love that movie.
Yeah, that's good. What's that line?
Get your patchouli stink out of my store. I just say that all the time randomly.
Yep, that's right. Nacho Libre, which was pretty funny.
Oh yeah, I saw that. Yep.
Shallow How, I've not seen that.
Oh, I actually like that movie a lot.
Right on.
It was sweet.
Be Kind Rewind, I was a little disappointed in, but
I was too, but I think it's only because I love Eternal Sunshine so much, and this was another Michel Gondry movie, and it was just didn't have the same magic.
Yeah.
I did love The Science of Sleep, though. That was a really good one.
Yeah. I think we have both remembered him being in The X-Files. He was like in an episode. He was like a kid. He was a little kid.
He was really
young. He was a real shiny baby.
I can't remember.
Oh, okay. Well, I remember back when he was in The X-Files. Also, I think the first time I ever remember seeing him, though, or like being like, oh, that guy's funny, he's in Tim Burton's Mars Attacks, and he's like one of the brothers.
Should probably mention his band, too.
Oh, it'll come up.
It'll come up? All right. Because he does a lot of singing in this movie.
He does. Yeah. Yep. Shirley MacLaine, who is an Academy Award-winning actor, who won that award for her role in Terms of Endearment. However, her first film, just trying to connect it to the genre a little bit, was in Alfred Hitchcock's The Trouble with Harry in 1955. And this isn't a horror movie or exactly a thriller, but it sounds like it. So the setup is, it's the story about what happens when the residents of a small Vermont village act when a dead body is found on a hillside. And it's listed as like a romantic comedy thriller. I haven't seen it.
What is this genre? Romantic comedy thriller? Yes, please. More of that, please.
All right. What? Yeah. We'll have to do a little deep digging and see if we can come up with a list of movies that fit in that category.
Yeah, if anyone wants to recommend romantic comedy thrillers to me, please do.
She was in just a couple of her other roles, Steel Magnolias, Postcards from the Edge. One that I remember specifically, I think, from the 90s was Guarding Tess with Nicolas Cage, and she plays the First Lady. So she asked to be protected by one particular Secret Service agent played by Nicolas Cage. He does not like her. And comedy, hilarious hijinks ensue.
Is that one also a romantic comedy thriller?
Oh, hey, it might fall into that.
Yeah. I
can't remember what the thriller part is, but...
Yeah. So you got Nicolas Cage on the brain, David?
I do.
Wait until our now playing?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, wait, what? How do you know? You know me so well.
Oh, yeah.
Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Ooh, he just gave me the vapors thinking of his name.
Give me the vapors thinking about Nicolas Cage?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Matthew McConaughey plays Danny Buck, who is the prosecutor. And also, I always got a shout out. I want to shout out for these genre pictures that these folks are in. Maybe most notoriously, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Next Generation.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, he does a good evil redneck.
And he is teamed up with Renee Zellweger in that movie, which is like, I think, both of their feature debuts. And they have worked diligently for years to scrub their names from those movies.
But we know. We remember. We know.
Actually, it's just getting released by Scream Factory on Blu-ray. And the original art had both of them on it. And they had to redo the art.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yep. Man. They took them off of it.
Oh, that's too bad.
Unfortunately. I remember him also from John Grisham's Time to Kill. I think it was maybe the first thing I ever saw him in that
I've
never
seen it.
Remember. He's in Interstellar. He's in Contact, which we were just on a trip to the Very Large Array where they filmed it, where Jodie Foster was there.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
And, oh, he is in Killer Joe, where he plays a hitman. And that is a grueling movie. Really grueling.
I've not heard of it.
It's William Friedkin directed that, and it's intense. I think he's been in a bunch of romantic comedies. Chelsea, do you know any in particular?
He might have been in a couple. I know he was in How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
All right.
And he was in The Wedding Planner with J-Lo.
All right.
He was also in Magic Mike.
All right.
Which I don't know if that counts as a romantic comedy, but it's definitely up my alley. Heyo. Yeah. So he's been in a few.
All right. Cool. Well, Jack Black and Matthew McConaughey have been in a movie together, and that movie was Tropic Thunder.
That's pretty funny. I've seen it. Remember finding out that that was Tom Cruise and... It just blew my mind.
My favorite when they're like, it's a fake head, and he like licks it.
Oh, God. Ooh.
Okay, this is a little disappointing to me, Chelsea. The taglines, there's only one.
No. Well, I guess that one wins then. Doesn't really matter what it is. Moving on.
Said tagline is, a story so unbelievable, it must be true.
Which I think is a totally fine tagline. I just wish there were a couple other options.
We already mentioned how a lot of the people that appear in the film, they're testifying about Bernie in the interviews are from the town.
Yeah, I did not realize that either time watching it. So that's real interesting.
Yeah, and some of the reactions, you know, we talked about this love for Bernie in Carthage. But I mean, of course, the district attorney doesn't have such a view. But there are a couple of other residents that didn't really respond that well to the movie. Someone named Tony Clements, who went on the record. Tony knew both Bernie and Marjorie. Tony says, quote, if it was fiction, it might be funny. But this was a real person in a real town. And no, I don't think it's funny at all. Also, the Hawthorne Funeral Home in town where Bernie and Marjorie met refused to allow them to use the name of the funeral home in the movie, and their statement was, quote, we felt we did not want the Hawthorne funeral name or family name thought of in a dark comedy. You always know locally these are real people and families, and there is a sting. Also, of course, a quote from the Pinellas County District Attorney Danny Buck Davidson. He says that, quote, you can't make a dark comedy out of a murder. This movie is not historically accurate. The movie does not tell her, as in Marjorie's, side of the story. So, you know, this seems like the filmmakers are really gung-ho about it all, but not everybody in town is.
Yeah, but they did find plenty of people in town who were willing to talk. And I know we mentioned in the true story that, you know, they couldn't even have his retrial in town because of the continued sentiments there.
Yep, exactly. And in the credits, you see Jack Black meeting with the real Bernie in Telford Unit State Prison. And also apparently Shirley MacLaine spoke to him over the phone. So I'm sure it helped inform their roles.
Well, inform them from his perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Holding back on talking about Jack Black and music because I just had this really interesting little Easter egg, I guess, for you Tenacious D fans. And that is that Carthage's local radio station is named KGAS. KGAS. In honor of Kyle Gass.
Cool.
Yeah. And of course, with all this music, you know, I love Jack Black singing in a movie. I don't even think I knew he had a band when I first saw his couple of movies. And then I was like, oh my God, he has like this crazy band. And he's like equally dedicated to it as he is his film. So when he sings a duet in the movie, I've Never Been in Love Before from Guys and Dolls. And then he sings 76 Trombones from Music Man. It was like really good. I was like, yes.
And he sings a whole lot of songs in church.
He does. A lot of those gospel songs.
Yeah, a lot of gospel songs. And yep. I was pretty surprised to find while watching this movie that David knew every lyric to every one of those songs. So it's like growing up having to go to church does.
It did.
Not me. I haven't heard those songs before in my life.
Yeah, I was like, I haven't heard the song since I was 11, but somehow I know all the melody and everything.
Yeah, it's crazy the way stuff from your childhood just like sticks.
Yep.
It's the way I know all the lyrics to the songs from Blue's Clues.
Oh,
you had no clue what I was talking about.
I was like, what?
I attended the Church of Blue's Clues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay. Mine are all like Saturday morning cartoon theme songs.
Oh.
Well, that's all the facts and figures that I have about this movie, Bernie. So we'll just, you know, briefly dive into our thoughts on the film. So what did you think overall? Did the knowledge of the true events, and I know we talked about the filmmaker's intent kind of throwing a little shade on our opinions, respective opinions on the movie, but what did you think overall?
Yeah, so this is my second time watching the movie. The first time I saw it was right after it came out, and I saw it in theaters. And, you know, at that point, I was not familiar with the true... Not only was I not familiar with the true story, but also a lot of parts of the true story hadn't really happened yet. Because, you know, this is a story that continued through 2016, just 2 years ago. And it really did color how I felt about the movie. And I still feel like it's a good movie separate from the true crime aspect. You know, I think it's well done. It's well acted. The pace is very good. It's a really simple, straightforward story. You know, there's not really much tension involved. But I just, the first time I saw the movie, I remember feeling like, you know, it's like the comedy in it is kind of how absurd it is. The fact that, haha, these townsfolk would side with this guy who killed this woman just because they like him so much versus disliking her so much. And, you know, you think like, oh, that's just so absurd that it's funny. But then you realize that behind the scenes, the filmmaker kind of seems to agree with that, and it becomes not absurd. And then you find out, no, these are actual townsfolks who feel that way. And, you know, there's little bits turning Marjorie into an explicit racist and calling her evil throughout the course of the movie. You know, these are things that didn't stick out to me the first time I watched it. And now kind of watching it more critically, they really rubbed me the wrong way. And I think that, you know, it did feel a little bit gendered to me, like them thinking that there's just something so inherently like wrong and evil about this woman because she doesn't act like this nice old lady that everyone's expecting. And it's like, I think it's fine to be an old lady and be a little bit of a bitch, whatever. You know, you shouldn't have to act the way other people want you to. And like real residents have said about her, you know, she just wasn't, it wasn't that she was rude. She just wasn't nice. You shouldn't have to be nice to people just for the sake of it. You know, that's not, I mean, not that you shouldn't be nice to people, but that doesn't mean you deserve to be murdered is what I'm saying. Right. You know, I think not fitting the role of a sweet old woman doesn't make your life any less valuable. And I don't think that's the message of this movie. I don't know. I got to say, I don't think I'd recommend it to anyone anymore now having read more about it. Sorry. I know a lot of people out there really like it and they were excited for us to cover it. And I was excited to cover it too, but read articles written by Marjorie's grandchildren and it's just... ugh. It just really kind of rubbed me the wrong way this time. How about you, David?
It's interesting because like a lot of the time, you know, when we're talking about the true crime aspect and I'm hearing it for the first time as we're talking about it, my opinion often changes by the time we're talking about the movie because I'm like, oh, okay. I didn't know how either accurate or not accurate or the motivations or the perceptions or in this case where the two worlds collide of the filmmaking and the true crime Yeah. You know, a lot of our movies, there's like years of separation, or it's someone who clearly, you know, is very easy to make them into the villain when it's the case of a horror movie. But in this case, yeah, I feel like it really complicates things. It's a super well crafted movie, and I understand why people like it. I mean, Jack Black is very charming. He's so good. He doesn't seem to have like this master plan, but I did go in with the feeling that like his intent was to murder one of these older widows. I think that his performance of this likable, multifaceted, you know, resident of this small Texas town was really good. I think you're right. I agree with you on the intent and just how they portray Marjorie, and then sort of the justifications that the townspeople come up with, or Bernie, or even that filmmakers are pushing us as an audience in the direction of being sympathetic towards Bernie. Because it's like Jack Black, who they could have hired a less charismatic actor, but instead Jack Black kind of pulled me in also.
And there's also the fact that they don't even show him shooting her. You know, they show him pick up the gun and you hear the bullets, but it cuts to a close up of her face chewing, which is, I guess, a pet peeve of Bernie's in the movie that they, you know, show earlier. And they just really made it seem like she deserved it. And I also think not showing him do it and having him kind of have that, oh no, what have I done moment is exactly what influenced Jodie Cole into thinking, oh, it's a classic dissociative episode based on this movie.
I will give it a little bit of praise, and that is that I did think that the stuff of Jack Black and Shirley MacLaine warming up to each other, he worked very hard to like get on her good side, and I thought that that stuff was kind of sweet. There's like a moment where they're, I think they're at the opera or something, and she like holds his hand.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, now they're close or friends. But I wasn't sure if they were going in a romantic relationship kind of thing with it at first or what. So what I'm saying is, if you like Jack Black, he does a great job in this. But overall, I think, like you said, the message after like knowing about how things really went down, especially knowing about Richard Linklater's perceptions of how things happened as well, it just kind of sours me on it.
Yeah. And the movie has picked a side. I feel like there's no question in the movie to them, you know, Jack Black or Jack Black's Bernie is 100% a good guy who snaps. They portray him as, you know, seeming to genuinely care about Marjorie, and, you know, he has pictures of them up in his house even after he murders her and hides her body in the freezer. I think it's really picked aside, and I think it kind of lost something in that. I think it could be a more interesting and complex story if it was not so one-sided in its portrayal of him and Marjorie.
There could have been one little scene, like I feel like I had to work a little bit, even though it was early on in the movie where I'm like, oh, he's gonna kill one of these older women. He could have played it with like a little bit of darkness, or one scene where the like mask falls or something, you know, and I feel like that would have gone a long way towards like introducing, even, I mean, why it's like,
but that's not what he wants to do.
Yeah,
that's not Bernie, and this is supposed to be 100% the lovable character. And I think that anything that a viewer reads into it, you know, in terms of there being some kind of darkness to Bernie's character, it was not put in there intentionally. I think that Richard Linklater, the story he wanted to tell was about this sweet guy who just, oops, I killed someone. Yep.
Yeah.
But it's a good movie. It's not a bad movie. And I think, honestly, knowing about what happened after the movie is what has really kind of turned me off. Because I remember really enjoying the movie the first time I saw it. You know, it's got everything I like. Murder and comedy. Yeah. But watch it. Watch for yourself. Form an opinion. As I think we mentioned earlier, the only place we could find to rent it is YouTube. I don't know. I wonder if there were some legal issues with
especially
it.
With the retrial or something. Yeah. I don't know.
It's weird that it's kind of disappeared from everywhere. Because it used to be streaming. I know it used to be streaming.
Yep. So, you know, let us know your thoughts on the movie too. Especially after like hearing about all the true crime aspects of it.
Rain on all of your parades, but I kind of do that. That's just what I do. I can't help it.
That's good. That's good. All right. So as we kind of wind down the episode, we're going to move on to just kind of the stuff that we are checking out currently. So Chelsea, what do you have on your list for now playing?
Well, for my now playing, I'm going to go with our Halloween movie marathon yesterday. We finally decorated the house and we watched Halloween Town to Calabar's Revenge and the house's October built to Halloween Town. We watched last year for the first time. I think we even talked about it on the podcast, watching it last year. Halloween Town 2, equally cute and entertaining. I love a good kids Halloween movie. You gotta like space, right? You got your horror movies, but I think you gotta interject just some fun positiveness in between, because all my best Halloween memories are from, you know, when I was a little kid, and I didn't really watch Michael Myers when I was a kid. I didn't watch murders or whatnot. I liked fun movies.
Yeah.
Except for Garfield's Halloween special. Hate that movie. And then House's October Built 2, I was a little disappointed with. I don't know. Those movies, I don't know how to feel about them. I really enjoy them showing all of the like haunted attractions, because I always love going to those. And we're going to check out one in New Mexico for sure next month.
Yep.
But the like plot line with the blue skeleton, I don't know. I think it just needs to decide whether it wants to actually kill people or not. Is it all fun and games? Or are you actually going to kill someone? But I felt that way the whole first movie, and I thought it ended with them like at least killing one of them, and apparently not. Apparently he's fine, because he was back in this one with like his tongue and not stabbed to death. And then this movie was like the same exact thing. So I don't know. The end. What's your now playing?
Halloween Town 1 and 2 were great. Yeah, I didn't grow up with them, but last year was the first time I watched for the first one, and this year was the first time I watched for the second one. I think they're a lot of fun. I like seeing all the monster masks, and it's very Halloween-y, so I like the fact that the plot is so specific to that particular day.
Yeah, that's always what I'm looking for in a good Halloween movie.
Yes, exactly. Not like Jaws. Who watches Jaws in October?
No, you watch that on the 4th of July.
Exactly, yeah. Well, my now playing is the film Mandy, directed by Panos Cosmatos, starring Nicolas Cage, the great Nicolas Cage.
With a beard.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And this movie has been my number one anticipated film of the year, even ahead of Halloween 2018. So I've been really stoked for this. I was more excited than Han Solo, which, don't get me wrong, Solo was excellent. I think we mentioned it earlier. Mandy is basically an 80s fever dream. If you were to take, I don't know, all the neon saturated colors of anything you've seen in an 80s horror movie, and the smoky effects and crazy editing and heavy metal, chainsaws, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 feels like a partial influence for this. Sword and sorcery films from the 80s seem like they're all inspired the director's vision. And basically it comes down to, it's a revenge flick.
Yes, it is a feast for the senses. It's really, I think, a completely unique experience. You know, if you happen to be able to see it in theaters, I don't know if it is having a real sort of run. It was just amazing on the big screen. And then we came home and David immediately bought it, because it's, you could already buy it or rent it to watch at home. It is completely unique. And I think that's becoming a bit more rare in movies. It's quite the experience. This is not a paid ad.
Not a paid ad for Mandy.
Also, Nicolas Cage is so good in it.
He is, yeah. He's excellent. And I love Nicolas Cage. I know like people kind of make fun of him, but he's a really great actor. And he sounds like he's a pretty decent person. So
yeah, he's a fantastic actor. I will always make fun of Not the Bees, yeah. In part because I love the original Wicker Man, and that as the remake, it just makes me chuckle. But man, he's amazing in this, and I think that the way he'll just kind of go for it in his acting really works to the benefit of the movie. It's the perfect role for him.
Yeah. So if you like anything that we said, check out Mandy.
Yes. Okay. It's also pretty violent, though.
It is violent.
If you don't mind violence, over the top. It's over the top, which to me is easier than just regular violence.
Yep. Yeah. Right on. Okay. What do you have for coming soon?
Yeah, my coming soon is going to be Destination Wedding.
All right.
I was promised that we would watch this.
Yeah. Yep. We're going to watch it tonight.
Really?
Yep.
Woohoo! Yeah, I'm excited. I love a good rom-com, and I feel like it's something for everyone, because it's a rom-com for me, and it's Keanu Reeves and what's her name for you? Whatever her name is.
Well, yep, what's her name?
Winona Ryder. David has a big crush on Winona Ryder.
Always and forever. Yep. Forever Winona.
Oh, yeah.
Or Wino Forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wino Forever. Yep.
Yep.
What's your coming soon?
Oh, my coming soon. Oh, I'm glad you asked. Speaking of revenge flicks, the movie Revenge has just hit Shudder, so I'm excited to check that out. And also Terrifier has hit Netflix, and that's the killer
evil clown.
Yes.
My favorite. Huh?
Yeah. It's supposed to be extremely gory and gross, but I'm eager to check it out. All right. Find us on social. You can find us everywhere. We are on Instagram at Based on True Crime. We're on Facebook at Based on True Crime Podcast. Most importantly, join our group from that page. We have a lot of fun there. It's the best way to interact with us personally and regularly, and everyone does a great job of jumping in and sharing really cool articles, so feel free to share some stuff that's true crimey, that's horror movie, even what you're up to on the weekend or what you're having for breakfast. We don't care. We like to comment on it.
Yeah, I really love our cult, and we're always active on there, even when we're less active on other social medias.
Yep, exactly. On Twitter, we are at True Crime Based. Also, we mentioned our Patreon at the top of the episode, but please consider contributing to that. And if you're already a Patreon supporter, thank you so much. We offer one exclusive podcast episode per month, and we have some pretty great topics. In the past, we've covered several Universal monsters. We've done Silence of the Lambs and a lot of other great stuff that we actually have not covered on the main podcast. So yeah, $1 a month will get you that. And then we have some neat little rewards for other tiers as well. And we are a proud member of the Murderly Network, a great team of like-minded podcasts. So check out Murderly at murder.ly. If you'd like to see my art and what I'm up to artistically, follow Lab Creature on Instagram at Lab Creature. And you can see all the fun spooky stuff, cat stuff, all that. I'm always posting almost every day. Our podcast theme and supporting music was composed and performed by Nico Vatisse of We Talk of Dreams. And he can be found on Twitter at We Talk of Dreams and the website WeTalkOfDreams.com. And also Instagram at the same handle at We Talk of Dreams. As we segue from summer into fall and the air begins to cool and the nights begin to be cold and you start craving pumpkin spice lattes.
Oh yeah.
Planning your Halloween costumes and planning parties and hay rides and jack-o'-lantern patterns.
And carefully scheduling out your movie viewing so you could watch every movie that you want to watch before Halloween.
Exactly.
Before Halloween.
Yeah.
It means double and triple features.
It does. Well, yeah. Just remember, death is but a door.
And time is but a window.
We'll be back.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.